Hello, and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks and the Learning College. I'm Alex Linder. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com. Today we're going to do Chapter 12, the Appendix Number 3, National Socialism. This will be about 18 pages. We've got three appendices left. We're going to do 12 here, and then we'll do 13 and a very brief 14 to conclude Siege by James Mason. I always want to call him Frank Mason. It's not Frank Mason. It's James Mason and his Siege. And this will be, let's see, pages 516 to 534 for Appendix 3, Chapter 12. Anyway, let's dig into it. 12, Appendix 3, National Socialism, 12.1, One Man's Armageddon, by Perry Worthen of Universal Order. Perry Worthen, Universal Order, and we heard from him last segment, which is up at vnnforum.com. The following is slightly edited excerpts from an autobiographical / philosophical essay by Perry Worthen, which was published by Universal Order and sent to Siege subscribers in 1983. Quote, "Even Satan can disguise himself to look like an angel of light." Corinthians 11:14. "It's been a year now," or I guess 2 Corinthians. "It's been a year now since I was laying face down, spread eagle, on Ore Dam Boulevard in Oroville, California." That's actually, as I read in 2017, that's the dam that went out in, I guess, was it earlier this year or late 2016? I can't remember. But anyway, Oroville, O-R-O-ville, California, on November 6, 1982, with Rate Barker being arrested for first-degree murder. Christian Lee Jones, Barker's 14-year-old recruit and runaway sidekick, had told sheriff and district attorney investigators that I had shot Joe Hoover for informing the police on activities within the Chico area National Socialists group. Hoover, 6 days short of 18, was about 6 months older than Barker and was his best friend and possible recruit. After Barker heard Jones's story, he agreed to confess in exchange for 3 years plus between 2 to 3 years probation. Jones also received 3 years, both of them to the California Youth Authority, in exchange for their testimony against me. And Chico is sort of up in the mountains there in California. It's a logging territory, and there's a river and kind of winding and a very slow road. If you get behind a logging truck, Chico, California. "I came to San Quentin Security Unit on August 8th, 1983. It was no surprise, as I'd been in lockdown or segregation through jail and the Vacaville Guidance Center, which sent me here." So he's been in San Quentin since 83. "In this unit, you travel everywhere handcuffed in the rear, even to the shower in the yard. When I came in, I scored 2 sour milks and some sort of sweet sandwich, and the guard escorted me to my new home here, cell 3B-22, singing to himself a line from Hotel California, 'Such a lovely place.' During the past year, I've had lots of time to gather my thoughts, and I hope to share them with comrades of the movement here in these pages." Subtitle, What Went Wrong? The arrest for Hoover's death came as no surprise after 3 weeks of press and television coverage demanding it, and that having been preceded by 5 weeks of media coverage demanding a solution to the end of the stuffing of school lockers locally with literature carrying racial invective, quote-unquote, which also bore our local dial-a-Nazi or white power message phone number. That's how they did it with telephone hotlines back before the internet. Call a number and get a message. After Hoover's body was discovered, 2 weeks after his death, rotting in a marsh, I was interviewed by major newspapers in the Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Bay Area, as well as by the Associated Press and the other wire services, all of which promptly tried and convicted us. This should come as no surprise to a veteran National Socialist who understands who and what controls the media. After all, they are there to make money and not spread our message or bother about justice or truth. It doesn't or shouldn't matter to comrades whether I was in fact guilty or innocent. The trial itself was a sham, a joke, and had I been a black radical or a leftist, I would have won an acquittal like Angela Davis, who would go on to be a paid speaker after torturing someone and being involved with killings. After having remained free throughout the trial stage, of course. He means Angela Davis, the black communist. I don't want to whimper and whine about the raw deal I got from the system. We NS all know about the system. In the December 1982 issue of Siege, the question was put, "We just want to know what happened here and why." Now I hope to tell you just that. What went wrong in my own case was, first, my recruitment was poor in its selection or lack of selection. After my arrest, at least six of these recruits gave statements to the police, and of these, five were called to testify. Of the remaining few, only one local old man and his aged wife stood by me to do what they could. So disloyalty and betrayal if you pick the wrong person. There was support from across the country and the world, however, as well as those national heroes who ran. One was a well-known Aryan atheist church guru who was until lately headquartered in Florida. Shortly before the expected arrest, I called upon him to obtain a $50 loan, which I could repay in 2 days. This I needed to bring an out-of-state person to Oroville by bus to escort my 10-year-old son, via another bus, to safety. This, quote, racialist champion didn't want to get involved, even though I had been a contributor of his in the past and had been a minister in his church. I don't know who he's talking about. My son was placed in a foster home after my arrest, where attempts to denazify him were started before we were able to transfer him to relatives 2.5 months later. He was also interrogated several times by the DA's office, while the defense attorneys never talked to him once. He was forced to testify and put through an ordeal not necessary to convict me. Ravaged by false guilt after the trial, he had thoughts of suicide, but after several counseling sessions, he has exchanged this notion for the transplanted idea that I, quote, murdered his friend. The ways of Big Brother affect even little children, and cowardice extends high into the ranks among so-called white racialist leaders, and the creep with a phony atheist church is not even the least of these. Another good example of these types is a Christian racialist leader who also refused to support me after my arrest or extend any conviction or extend any effort on behalf of my son. It was claimed that I had converted to his faith too recently. This same angel of light freely labels anyone whom he has a disagreement with a Jew, some Christian. It is not my intention to quibble about the injustice of the press and media. My effort here was to try to show what I found to be wrong with the movement in general since my arrest, judging from a great amount of communication with every source, mostly related to the racialist cause in one form or another. New subtitle, Counterfeits. The DA's office claimed they photostatted 3,500 letters to and from me between November 6th and April 20th, 1983, when we were well into jury selection. Most of these offered support in one form or another. Good wishes, a few dollars for stamps and tobacco, a publication of a group they supported or published themselves. I began to see a pattern. Some were the real thing and some were not. And of those that were not, many honestly thought they were. There are agents provocateur and spies, yes, but normally our own name-calling, I found. Excuse me. Together with inner... Let me just read that sentence again. There are agents provocateur and spies, yes, but normally our own name-calling, I found, together with intergroup jealousies, were responsible for most claims that so-and-so is an agent, quote, a Jew, quote, queer, etc., which in the end does more harm than all the real agents provocateur and spies put together. So this is why it's very important to make people who make accusations like that prove it. Otherwise, you just are catering to weaklings, and they are a huge portion of what these guys in those days called the movement. You don't need weak people. Weak people don't make you stronger, they make you weaker. I often feel the ADL is laughing at us with delight as we continue to divide ourselves into feuding factions. However, the real problem is with the serious people in the movement, he puts serious in quotes. Often we will be eager to allow too much free rein to units of our organizations in an effort to merely build membership. Often we will admit shady characters in exchange for a healthy donation just in order to increase our funds or for a host of other equally unsound reasons. What you see is what you get, but what do you see? If I lay a $20 bill in front of you, you say it's worth $20. But is it? What if it's counterfeit and only has the look of an honest $20 bill? If it's not backed by anything, it's not worth much more than toilet paper. Sooner or later, most all phonies are detected, and when they are destroyed in one way or and when they are destroyed in one way or another. If the counterfeit bill had a brain and knew what was going on to the point it knew it was tender and was often spent and passed around as good money, do you think it would have any idea it was a counterfeit? We can compare this to a person of part Negro blood who doesn't honestly know he's a mulatto, white skin but half black, who becomes a National Socialist, Identity Christian, Klansman, etc., perhaps even securing membership in an organization which maintains sloppy security research, as our local California district did. This person is mentally destroyed when the true facts are revealed and he's found to be racially counterfeit. I recall the suicide of a Klan unit leader in New York, Dan Burroughs, some years back after he discovered he was part Jewish. There was actually a movie made about that guy. I forget who was in it. Ryan Gosling was in it playing Dan Burroughs, if I recall correctly, but I don't recall the name of the movie. It was pretty good, though. I've seen it. We also have the knowing counterfeits, like Frank Collin, a.k.a. Khan, who, though half-Jewish, was, quote, commander of one of the larger National Socialist units in the country. He was also a child molester, and how such an unnatural person became, or remained, the head of a group of National Socialists escapes me. Surely it was excellent propaganda for the system to use against us. Likewise, the perfectly legal, clean white hands National Socialist in the movement may consider my crime, if in fact I'm guilty, as a blot on the National Socialist record. Others defend the radical idea that informants, when uncovered, should be shot. Bad money will inflate a monetary system and everybody pays for it until it is discovered and the holder pays. The best policy is not to take counterfeits in the first place. From anarchy comes order. Order grows out of anarchy as light grows out of darkness. Refugees in the dark flock to the nearest light, but even the devil can look like an angel. When anarchy comes, through nuclear war or whatever cause, I need not describe the lack of order and leadership that will exist. The masses will flock to the first helicopter with a bullhorn. The communists have a plan, but do the National Socialists? The larger groups do not, and the smaller ones will be lucky to survive at all if they can. Who's ready, if anyone? Where is the leadership? The plan? The leading organizations have been claiming that no one can function effectively, much less win, until we all get rid of our inner, quote, spiritual weaknesses. So they begin to reform. But they are doing it on a misguided basis. Picture this. You're watching a civil rights special on television. A special bill is being passed in Congress. The president is there, and the cabinet, both houses of Congress, the Joint Chiefs, etc., as well as 200,000 civil rights demonstrators before the Capitol. The TV goes out in the middle of the president's speech, and you learn 15 minutes later that some terrorist has detonated a 20-kiloton plutonium bomb made out of stolen nuclear waste. This is the same type and size bomb used on Nagasaki in 1945. There are 250,000 dead, counting the demonstrators, the heads of government, and local inhabitants. Even though a small band of anarchists, bent on ending government altogether, claims responsibility and maintains hope the masses will support them in creating a state of unblemished anarchy, the racialist right is blamed, and the Justice Department orders the arrest and internment of all racialists. What do you do? Do you have a plan? Does your party or unit have a plan? Is your gun and its supplies ready to go? And go where? Do you know where to safely meet? The local police know what to do the minute they receive the arrest order. Most likely, if you have time, you'll grab your gun and your gear and head for the hills to hide someplace. God knows where. You don't. You're now a revolutionary. The counterfeit is spendable. The Looking Glass Führers and their five-man parties have their hour of glory and defeat. Imagine a nuclear attack by an enemy nation, and the picture is even worse. Terrorists will have these weapons soon, and they will use them. Nations have nuclear weapons, and they will use them. Someday, only the fittest survive. What it all comes to. If National Socialists are to survive and be a vital part of a white American future, they had better learn. The first thing is to stay out of the public eye. In all of Ireland, the IRA doesn't maintain a single post office box, yet they do quite well. Being public, you will only attract the Joneses, Barkers, Hoovers, etc. You'll get the Wishwhites, the Counterfeits, and the Mirror Führers, etc., and what useful folk you might get will fast become disgusted by the others, quit, and form their own splinter outfits, hoping not to repeat the same mistakes, but of course doing so. Secret selective recruitment is the answer. Secret selective recruitment. You join with them because you want and need them. They don't join because the policy is a public open door. Next, you must understand that the system will not let you vote it away. George Lincoln Rockwell said as much, and also said that if it were to be voted away, then stormtroopers would have to come out in force to defend the right of the newly elected NS government to take power. Most of the dumb white masses will never understand true white racialism anyway, and if you explained it to them, they wouldn't believe you. Let them perish with the other fools when the day comes, or follow the leaders they must when and if we're in power. Understand, too, that not all whites march to the beat of our drum, and some prefer other white racialist alternatives. Expect that even if as a minority we can maintain NS turf somewhere in the future, if a sound plan has been laid, the Posse Comitatus proclaim power to the county, yet they are generally anti-NS. However, even they would allow a county or a number of counties to maintain an NS regime if that is what the population demanded. You're as powerful as the amount of support you can obtain, organize, and lead. Right now, the NS cause is not only very weak and without a master plan, but fractioned. Every local unit aspires to be a national party and lead the white masses to victory. It is best to remain a strong local unit and, if necessary, import good NS material from outlying areas where effective organizing is less or not possible. Comrades who may need a home, job, or other support should be used to build a community within a community. Many good local units will make a real party. Leadership needs to be kept at the local level. Any national leadership can be rotated and, at times, in a capacity of general administration. No national policy need be set. Local X may wear brown shirts, and local Y may wear black shirts, and so it goes with every smaller issue in each locale. In this way, there will be a place for everyone, with everyone together, within one cause. If we don't start putting it together soon, we will be nothing when the TV goes off. And that's the end of 12.1. 12.2, the 25 points. by Gottfried Feder. The following material has been abstracted and translated from the 17th edition of Gottfried Feder's pamphlet, Das Programm der NSDAP und seine weltanschaulichen Grundgedanken, Munich 1930. The 25 points constituting the political platform of the party have been given here in complete form, exactly as originally published, except for their translation into English. The remaining material from the 52-page pamphlet has been considerably condensed, however. The program of the NSDAP is presented here strictly for historical reasons, and no inferences are to be drawn as to the present policies of the World Union of National Socialists or any of its affiliates. The party program, as distinct from the philosophical foundations of National Socialism, was intimately bound and constrained by the immediate political, economic, and social circumstances and conditions of Germany some four decades ago. Nevertheless, it is interesting to see just what was the content of the program which led to the party's success in Germany, if only to avoid some of the misconceptions which have been deliberately spread by our opponents. Liberal elements have labeled the program reactionary, and conservative elements have labeled it socialist, i.e. Marxist. The two most widely read, quote, authorities on the subject, namely W. L. Shirer, a Jew, and Alan Bullock, an English guy, have vehemently denounced the 25 points in their books, but have been careful to actually avoid setting forth those points so that their readers could judge for themselves. Here they are. Program of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. The National Socialist German Workers' Party, registered as the National Socialist German Workers' Union at a great mass meeting on February 25, 1920, in the Hofbrauhaus Festsaal, like the big dining room of the Hofbrauhaus in Munich, if you've ever been there, announced its program to the world, so from February 25, 1920. In Section 2 of the Constitution of our party, this program is declared to be unalterable. It is as follows. The program of the German Workers' Party is limited as to period. The leaders have no intention, once the aims are announced in it have been achieved, of setting up fresh ones in order to ensure the continued existence of the party by the artificially inspired discontent of the masses. So they have no intention, once they've achieved their aims, of setting up a new one, as they're addressing artificial problems they seek to resolve. 1. We demand the union of all Germans, on the basis of the right of the self-determination of peoples to form a great Germany. So Woodrow Wilson, self-determination is their first demand. Union of all Germans. 2. We demand equality of rights for the German people in its dealings with other nations, and abolition of the peace treaties of Versailles and Saint-Germain. 3. We demand land and territory, colonies, for the nourishment of our people and for settling our surplus population. 4. None but members of the nation may be citizens of the state. None but those of German blood, whatever their creed, may be members of the nation. No Jew, therefore, may be a member of the nation. 5. Anyone who is not a citizen of the state may live in Germany only as a guest and must be regarded as being subject to the alien laws. The right of voting on the leadership and the laws of the state is to be enjoyed by the citizens of the state alone. We demand, therefore, that all official positions of whatever kind, whether in the Reich, the provinces, or the small communities, shall be held by citizens of the state alone. We oppose the corrupt parliamentary custom of filling posts merely with a view to party considerations and without reference to character or ability. 7. We demand that the state shall make its first duty to promote the industry and livelihood of the citizens of the state. If it is not possible to nourish the entire population of the state, foreign nationals, non-citizens of the state, must be excluded from the Reich. So, no H-1B there, huh? 8. All further non-German immigration must be prevented. We demand that all non-Germans who enter Germany subsequently to August 2, 1914 shall be required forthwith to depart from the Reich. 9. All citizens of the state shall possess equal rights and duties. 10. It must be the first duty of every citizen of the state to perform mental or physical work. The activities of the individual must not clash with the interests of the whole, but must proceed within the framework of the community and must be for the general good. We demand, therefore, 11, abolition of incomes unearned by work, breaking of the thraldom of interest. 12, in view of the enormous sacrifices of life and property demanded of a nation by every war, personal enrichment through war must be regarded as a crime against the nation. We demand, therefore, the total confiscation of all war profits. 13. We demand the nationalization of all businesses which have, hitherto, been amalgamated into trusts. 14. We demand that there shall be a profit-sharing in the great industries. 15. We demand a generous development of provision for old age. 16. We demand the creation and maintenance of a healthy middle class, immediate communalization of the large department stores and their lease at a low rate to small traders, and that the most careful consideration shall be shown to all small traders in purveying to the state the provinces or smaller communities, as vendors or contractors or suppliers to the state. 17. We demand a land reform suitable to our national requirements, the passing of a law for the confiscation without compensation of land for communal purposes, the abolition of interest on land mortgages, and prohibition of all speculation in land. 18. We demand ruthless war upon all those whose activities are injurious to the common interest, sordid criminals against the nation, usurers, profiteers, etc., must be punished with death, whatever their creed or race. 19. We demand that the Roman law, which serves the materialistic world order, shall be replaced by a German common law. 20. With the aim of opening to every capable and industrious German the possibility of higher education and consequent advancement to leading positions, the state must consider a thorough reconstruction of our national system of education. The curriculum of all educational establishments must be brought into line with the requirements of practical life. Directly the mind begins to develop, the schools must aim at teaching the pupil to understand the idea of the state, state sociology. We demand the education of specially gifted children of poor parents, whatever their class or occupation, at the expense of the state. 21. The state must apply itself to raising the standard of health in the nation by protecting mothers and infants, prohibiting child labor, and increasing bodily efficiency by legally obligatory gymnastics and sports, and by extensive support of clubs engaged in the physical training of the young. Wow, a legal duty to exercise. 22. We demand the abolition of mercenary troops and the formation of a national army. 23. We demand legal warfare against conscious political lies and their dissemination in the press. In order to facilitate the creation of a German national press, we demand that A. All editors and their co-workers of newspapers employing the German language must be members of the nation, i.e. no Jews. B. Special permission from the state shall be necessary before non-German newspapers may appear. These need not necessarily be printed in the German language. C. Non-Germans shall be prohibited by law from participating financially in or influencing German newspapers, and the penalty for contravention of the law shall be suppression of any such newspaper and immediate deportation of the non-German involved. So they're not going to let Jews take over their organs of communication. They're going to make that illegal. It must be forbidden to publish newspapers which are damaging to the national welfare. We demand the legal prosecution of all tendencies in art and literature which exert a destructive influence on our national life, and the closing of institutions which militate against the above-mentioned requirements. 24. We demand liberty for all religious denominations in the state, so far as they are not a danger to it, and do not militate against the moral and ethical feelings of the German race. The party, as such, stands for positive Christianity, but does not bind itself in the matter of creed to any particular confession. It combats the Jewish materialist spirit within and without us, and is convinced that our nation can achieve permanent recovery from within only on the principle, the common interest before self-interest. Finally, 25, that all the foregoing requirements may be realized, we demand the creation of a strong central national authority, unconditional authority of the central legislative body over the entire Reich and its organizations in general, and the formation of diets and vocational chambers for the purpose of executing the general laws promulgated by the Reich in the various states of the Confederation. The leaders of the party swear to proceed, regardless of consequences, if necessary at the sacrifice of their lives, toward the fulfillment of the foregoing points. Munich, February 24, 1920. After full discussion at the general meeting of members on May 22, 1920, it was resolved that, quote, this program is unalterable, unquote. This does not imply that every word must stand unchanged, nor that any efforts to extend or develop the program are to be prohibited, but it does imply that the principles and basic ideas contained in it are not to be tampered with. There can be no twisting and turning for reasons of expediency, no secret meddling with the most important, and for the present order of politics, society, and economics most unwelcome, points in the program, no deviation from its original sense. Adolf Hitler has emphasized the two cornerstones of the program by printing them in heavy type. The common interest before self-interest. That is the spirit of the program. And breaking the thraldom of interest. That is the kernel of National Socialism. And there were a couple of footnotes. One was William Shirer, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, New York, 1960, and Ellen Bullock, Hitler, A Study in Tyranny, New York, 1953. The second footnote was, on April 13, 1928, Adolf Hitler made the following elucidation to the program, quote, because of the mendacious interpretations on the part of our opponents of point 17 of the program of the NSDAP, the following explanation is necessary. Since the NSDAP is fundamentally based on the principle of private property, it is obvious that the expression, quote, confiscation without compensation, refers merely to the creation of possible legal means of confiscating, when necessary, land illegally acquired or not administered in accordance with the national welfare. It is therefore directed in the first instance against the Jewish companies which speculate in land. Signed, Adolf Hitler, Munich, April 13, 1928. Now, 12.3, Program of the World Union of National Socialists. In less than 100 years, Marxism has grown from a Machiavellian scheme in the twisted minds of Marx, Engels, and a few other Jews, until today it is a scientific, terroristic monster astride the backs of half the Earth's population, with powerful, slimy tentacles reaching secretly into the lives of all the rest of the people. By the use of incredibly clever lies, diabolically calculated to appeal to the noblest emotions of humanity, and by the enshrinement of its devilish doctrines as a religion, which is supplanting the failing powers of the older, genuine religions, Marxism has raced to the point where only a major miracle can halt its rapid and inevitable triumph over the entire planet. No laws, no present organization, no government in existence, and no ordinary doctrine can stay the historical march of this evil giant. It should be obvious that the democracies, rotted to the core with corruption, weakness, and Jewish manipulations, have been the very breeding ground of Marxism, and it is ridiculous to pretend that these very forces, which could not prevent the growth of the red monster, which actually fostered and nurtured it, can now destroy it. Marxism is actually a new religion, the cleverly disguised scientific worship of self, the religion of naked egotism, which presumes to conquer nature. Only an opposite doctrine, a doctrine of selflessness and idealism based on scientific truth, advanced and held with the same religious fanaticism as Marxism, can inspire men with the miraculous powers to reverse the world revolution of evil, which has almost passed into history as an accomplished fact. The only doctrine capable of such a heroic task, the only doctrine with the proven power to fire the minds and hearts of millions of men to fight and conquer Jewish Bolshevism, is National Socialism, the doctrine of idealism, the sacrifice of the selfish, ingrown ego for the good of one's fellows, the stuff of all great religions. With such mighty inspiration, tiny Davids have ever conquered their Goliaths, as we shall ours. Unless the white man can throw off years of Jewish brainwashing, muster the courage to face up to the nightmarish lateness of the situation, and organize himself into an effective, unified world organization to fight for his ideals and against the Jew and his horrible Marxism, the white man will soon sink forever in a brown chaos of degradation, slavery, and eventual death. For while it is mathematically certain that, except for a miracle, the Jews will soon conquer the earth with their Marxism, subversion, and Zionist imperialism, their victory will be their last act upon earth. Like the eternal parasites they are, the Jews will soon perish in the eaten-out corpse of their dead host. Therefore, we announce our purpose to be nothing less than a worldwide effort to free humanity from Jewish domination and subversion in all their forms, and the creation of an idealistic, racially realistic, socially progressive, international world order, which we must have if we are to remain masters of our own planet. To this worldwide goal, we solemnly pledge our lives. Lincoln Rockwell, Commander, American Nazi Party. World Union of National Socialists, Box 550, Arlington, Virginia. And maybe the editing's a little off here, but there's some other statement here to conclude this particular segment, which is seven articles of belief, I guess. One, we believe that an honest man can never be happy in a naked scramble for material gain and comfort without any goal which he believes is greater than himself and for which he is willing to sacrifice his own egotism. This goal was formerly provided by fundamentalist religions, but science and subversion have so weakened all traditional religions and given man such an unwarranted, short-sighted conceit of his, quote, power over nature, that he has, in effect, become his own god. He is spiritually lost, even if he will not yet admit it. We believe that the only realistic goal which can still lift man out of his present unhappy selfishness and into the radiance of self-sacrificing idealism is the upward struggle of his race, the fight for the common good of his people. Two, we believe that society can function successfully and therefore happily only as an organism, that all parts benefit when each part performs the function for which it is best suited to produce a unified, single-purposed whole, which is then capable of outperforming any single part. The whole thus vastly increasing the powers of all cooperating parts, and the parts therefore subordinating a part of their freedom to the whole, that the whole perishes and all parts therefore suffer whenever one part fails to perform its own function, usurps the function or interferes with the function of another part, or, like a cancer, devours all the nourishment and grows wildly and selfishly all out of proportion to its task, which latter is exactly the effect on society of the parasitic Jews and their Marxism. 3. We believe that man makes a genuine progress only when he approaches nature humbly and accepts and applies her eternal laws, instead of arrogantly assuming to ignore and conquer nature, as do the Marxists, with their environmentalism, special laws of biological equality for humans only, and insane denial of the primitive and fundamental institution of private property. 4. We believe that struggle is the vital element of all evolutionary progress and the very essence of life itself, and that it is the only method whereby we have and can maintain dominion over the other animals of the earth, that we must therefore welcome struggle as a means of testing and improving us, and that we must despise weaklings who run away from struggle. We believe that life itself is awarded by nature only to those who fight for and can win, and not to those who wish or beg for it as a right, quote unquote. 5. We believe that no man is entitled to the services and products of the labor of his fellow men unless he contributes at least an equal amount of goods or services of his own production or invention. We believe that the contribution by a member of society of nothing else but the tokens called money is a fraud upon his fellows and does not excuse a man capable of honest work of his responsibility to produce his share. 6. We believe that it is to the advantage of society to see that every honest man has freedom and opportunity to achieve his maximum potentials by preserving his health, protecting him from unforeseeable and ruinous catastrophes, educating him to his capacity in the areas of his abilities, and guarding him against economic and political exploitation. And finally, 7. We believe that Adolf Hitler was the gift of an inscrutable providence to a world on the brink of Jewish Bolshevik catastrophe, and that only the blazing spirit of this heroic man can give us the strength and inspiration to rise, like the early Christians, from the depths of persecution and hatred, to bring the world a new birth of radiant idealism, realistic peace, international order, and social justice for all men. And that concludes the 12th chapter. And the appendixes there involve the different statements from Werthen and World Union of Socialists and Hitler and the NSDAP party program. And finally, George Lincoln Rockwell, American Nazi Party. Anyway, thanks for being with me today. And I'll be back with you again real, real soon. And we'll wrap up Siege with the 13th and 14th appendixes.